Nation.
You're invited to take your seat.
Take a seat.
At the Warriors Roundtable.
It's a three. In and out. Rebound. Peyton. Out to Curry. Let's it fly. Three ball. Left corner pocket.
Welcome to the table. The exclusive home of your Golden State Warriors. 95-7 the game.
Curry fires away. Three ball above the break.
Here's Kevin Dana.
Right there.
And Gary St. Jean.
What up, ladies and gentlemen? We welcome you to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana alongside the saintly one, Gary St. Jean, reminding you that the Warriors 2023-24 season is presented by Kaiser Permanente. You want to hit us up? We're taking your calls all hour long till 7 p.m. 888-957-9570. Again, that number, 888-957-9570. Well, a lot to get to tonight. We will start with the game last night. And, Gary, I don't know if you're a believer in this old adage, but one of the first things I heard about NBA basketball when I was growing up and watching games before I was a teenager is the phrase, you can't win a game in the first quarter, but you sure as hell can lose a game in the first quarter. And if there was ever an Exhibit A to that, last night was Exhibit A.
Yeah, Kev, you know, you're spot on in that we've got to change, though, in the NBA with these 15-20-point deficits and teams coming back, and it's because of the three ball and the pace of the game. But to last night's game, I was really anxious to watch that game because I had watched the Knicks play the Kings. And I just loved the physicality in the game and the competitiveness. And we'll talk about the officials and the thought process with the changing of emphasis on calls. But last night's game, early on, it was very clear that the Knicks were setting the tone. And from their great defense, they created offense. And I'm just really, really impressed. I'm going to ask you this question. The only other team that I know that's playing this physical as the Knicks is the Orlando Magic. And
okay.
But the Knicks are on their own level right now, and the Warriors didn't match it. That's as simple as I can put it. When I look at Kuminga and Wiggins' rebound numbers, it's just got to be better. When Hart is 6'4". And he gets 10 boards, and your guys are only getting one or two or three, that's not going to win. It doesn't translate to winning. And if it wasn't for the bench last night, it would have been a long, long night.
Yeah, I mean, the final score was 119-112. To your point, Jonathan Kuminga had one rebound the entire game in 26 minutes, and I know you've been on him, Saint, pretty much his entire career about needing to rebound better, and this was certainly one of those games where you'd like to see him rebound better. Now, you always hear whenever a team, you know, gets down 8-0 or 20-4 like Golden State did last night that they came out flat. Saint, did you feel like they came out flat last night? How do you determine if a team comes out flat? Because it's more than just making shots and missing shots.
Well, the physicality, as I noted, the getting after it from the Knicks standpoint was terrific. Their ball pressure was great, denying one pass away, boxing out on rebounds, 50-50 balls were all theirs. They just completely set the tone. You don't see them run a lot, and they got some opportunities out in the open floor, and you know, I've known Tom Thibodeau. He's from New England, like me. He's from New Britain, Connecticut. And, you know, he spent a lot of time under some great coaches that I have a lot of respect for. He was there with Boston when they won the championship. And,
yep.
You know, he's there's not many guys that bring it like he does every day. And his players seem to be very receptive to playing that way. And when everybody's on the same page like that, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, he's a two-time coach of the year in the NBA for a reason. He won it with the Bulls his first year, won it with the Knicks his first year there as well. This is what Steve Kerr had to say about the Knicks just taking it to Golden State last night, then saying, I want to get your response after.
Yeah, it was almost the exact opposite of our game in New York a couple weeks ago, where I think we started out that game 14-0. I thought the Knicks were great tonight, right from the very beginning. You know, they took it to us. They were physical. They played with great force. And I thought Tom made a great move starting McBride, you know, with OG out, you know, putting McBride in there, space the floor. And obviously he got going, and they had us really spread out early. And we knew they were going to come in and play hard, you know, after we got them a couple weeks ago. That's kind of their identity. They're a hard playing team, and they took it to us tonight.
Yeah, that's really Steve brings out a great point about McBride. And you know, Anunoby, help me with this, Kev. When he starts, they're like 14-2, something like that.
They are 15-2 when OG Anunoby plays.
That's phenomenal. That's amazing. So he brings this young guy. And I thought he was going to play him 48 minutes. He took him out for 2 minutes. He gave him a break.
Yeah.
But then he threw him back in there. But his three-point shooting was terrific. I have friends that live in West Virginia, and they're always telling me about players they got back there. I didn't know anything about this guy at all. And this guy's got a nice stroke. What do you think he is, 6'2", maybe? 6'3"?
Yeah, he can't be more than 6'3". He's like a souped-up version, and this is going to go over people's heads who don't watch either West Virginia or the G League. He's like a super souped-up version of Daxter Miles Jr., a guy who's just kind of like a freewheeling gunner on offense, who was an undersized guard, played like 5 years in the G League. Good player, but Miles McBride is able to do this at the NBA level. And, I mean, I think last night was his 10th career NBA start. Of course, he's getting the start because OG Anunoby's not playing. And, well, he's not the same position, but, you know, there's no Mitchell Robinson, there's no Julius Randle, and so they're just, you know, short on numbers, which I think maybe even for Tibbs, like, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because he could just shorten his rotation, which he apparently loves to do. If you're gonna play Josh Hart 48 minutes and Miles McBride all of but 89 seconds last night. I mean, you imagine, he's just a bundle of energy. He got hot and he stayed hot. 9-13 from the field, 6-9 from three, chasing Steph Curry all over the place on defense.
And again, Kev, in the old days, you couldn't do that. They would have posted up, either he or Brunson. They would have taken him to the box. And what I'm saying here is Brunson, he's like a small Sherman tank. I mean, I love the way he plays. I absolutely love him. And you know, the tie between DiVincenzo and Hart and him, it's terrific, the Villanova connection. And, you know, we had Dante here last year, and what a terrific job he did. And he would have stayed here if it wasn't for the money. He got a great deal to leave. Otherwise, he loved playing here. He thinks the world of Steph, and you know, just loves the culture and the way they play. And, you know, he goes in there, and he's been asked to score a lot more than he has in his career. I mean, he's been a guy that defends and, you know, rebounds and does the little things to help you win. But here, he's shooting a lot of threes and doing a great, great job for him. And you know who shocked me, Kev? Because I don't watch the Knicks that much. That guy Hartenstein, my gosh, I saw three things. One, he can pass. And my old pal Pete Carril used to say, you show me a player who knows how to pass, he knows how to play. That guy was on what I call a short roll. In the pick and roll, he doesn't roll all the way to the rim. He rolls like 2 feet below the free throw line. And then he's changing it to the weak side corner. Just beautifully, beautifully. Then he's got a nice little touch, a little floater or flip shot there. And, you know, you just loved how he played. I think he's on a minutes restriction, which, you know, made them go even smaller. But they played a tremendous game. You know, what I'm saying to you is the Warriors starters did not get off to a good start. And the bench played very well. And they were in it. They had shots there. You know, you brought up the point that Draymond had a layup, and it was grease on the ball. It slipped out of his hands, but they would have been right there. You know, even with how hard the Knicks were playing, the guys on the bench, my gosh, I can't say enough about Chris Paul and Thompson and Davis. You know, Podzinski didn't have a big game, and, you know, that's going to happen when you have a rookie season. But it's a tough loss, and we'll talk about the standings and all of that, but I really thought that – I didn't think the Knicks could score enough to beat the Warriors, and I was wrong.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, they probably weren't expecting 29 points out of Miles McBride, who scored a career high in that game. Quick story on Miles McBride. I was at – this was 2021 or 2022 NBA Summer League, whichever year was his rookie year. So I think it was 2021. I could be wrong on that. But I was at a restaurant with some NBA broadcasting folks, some people around the league. And this it was at the Cosmopolitan at Momofuku, a really nice restaurant.
Oh, boy.
And in walks Miles McBride after having played a game in his New York Knicks Summer League jersey. Game played straight from the gym to the restaurant. Had not seen anything like it before.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Just kind of shows his personality a little bit. But yeah, kudos to him. You mentioned the Draymond where the ball slipped out of his hands. At that point, it's 99-95. The Warriors have started the fourth quarter on a 7-0 run. They're on a fast break. They just turned the Knicks over. Draymond Green takes a power dribble to set up the layup because I think he needed to take a dribble in order to get to the hoop. I don't think he would have been able to stride there in time, if I remember the play correctly, or stride there without walking. Yep. And then it slipped out of his hands. Then the Knicks score the next 7 points. Golden State doesn't score for 4.5 minutes, and that was basically it.
Yeah, that's a good summation. And, you know, those are the little plays. When you're in a tough game like that, that can be the difference. And as you said, they got out in the open floor. And, you know, I'm thinking about the Knicks in my day, you know, when Pat Riley was coaching them, and they had Oakley and Ewing and John Starks and all of those guys. And this is a compliment to this team. They're not as big as that team, but boy, they play as hard and as physical as that team. And it's all led by Brunson. I just can't give the guy enough praise. I love his leadership. He's a really great guy. I got to know him when he was in Dallas with my son Greg. And he's just a winner. That's the biggest compliment I can give him. His balance and his usage of his body to initiate contact, to create space. He's always using what we call the inside shoulder. Let's say he's dribbling right. He's going to initiate that left shoulder into the defender to try to get them going you know, east-west. Meanwhile, he's just stepping up and going north-south. And he may not make the first team, but he should be second team All-Pro. That's how much respect I have for him. He's just done a fantastic job.
34.7 assists last night for Jalen Brunson in the 7-point Knicks win. Well, folks, the city calls. When you spend $75 or more at Warriors Shop with Rakuten, you'll get a free exclusive jacket. Sign up now at Rakuten.com/Warriors. This offer is only valid while supplies last. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from WNBA Golden State President Jess Smith in a pre-recorded interview that happened on NBC Sports Bay Area last night as part of the Women's Empowerment Month broadcast. And we'll talk about the win over the Lakers. Take a look at the Western Conference standings. All that and more. Taking your calls right here on 95.7 The Game.
Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean are holding court.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
At the Warriors Roundtable.
You can't handle the truth!
Curry, screened by Draymond. Curry gets free for three.
Got it!
On 95.7 The Game. Now back to Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean.
The WNBA Golden State team will begin play in the 2025 WNBA season at Chase Center. Get first access to season tickets for this historic season. Place a deposit at warriors.com/WNBA today. And as part of Women's Empowerment Month, newly named Golden State WNBA President Jess Smith sat in on last night's Women's Empowerment Month broadcast of the Warriors Knicks on NBC Sports Bay Area. So let's have a little listen to it.
Very special guest with us, Jenny Kavner, LaChyna Robinson, and Jess Smith, the president of the brand new WNBA team
that's
coming to town in 2025. That sounds good, right?
It does sound good. Every time I say it, I get more and more excited. You're here on a night like tonight and watching the energy. I can't wait to create this atmosphere for the WNBA.
Man, I was so excited to meet you, obviously, big in the women's basketball space. But I'm just curious what you're seeing right now in terms of the trajectory of the WNBA. When you look at the metrics, when you look at the numbers,
yeah,
it is skyrocketing. It is really growing. But tell me why it's also good business.
It's great business. The W has been a leader for a long time in this space. And what we're seeing right now is the star power, these incredible athletes that continue to lead, fans bringing them into the league, media. These numbers do not lie, right? It's week after week, season after season, that you're seeing women's basketball really lead the way there. And with that, everything else. You know, fans right now want to feel connected and understand their power within women's sports. And they're buying tickets. They're buying merchandise. They're tuning in. They're following the athletes. And that's not slowing down anytime soon.
You mentioned Steph Curry a little bit and the activeness that he has in the women's game specifically. We see him at Stanford women's basketball games. How excited has he been to know that the WNBA is coming?
Yeah, and just the last month, right, you had him and Sabrina in the three-point competition. I can't ask for a better example of how this should feel. They're both powerful. They're both leaders. They're both record holders. And here they are, you know, working together in their talents. On top of that, he has videos, you know, and interviews talking about Caitlin Clark and how not to compare them sometimes because, you know, he has things that she's stronger in, you know, and he has weaknesses. You know, he's a leader in being able to accept how powerful he is and yet, you know, standing the woman up at the same time.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the WNBA fan, and we know how important accessibility is to the W fan, whether it's media or feeling connected to the team in the community. How can the fans here in the Bay Area get involved with the WNBA team?
Yeah, so to start, please follow us on social media. Like, we'll be, you know, posting all of our updates there and inviting you in. You can certainly place your seat deposit now. We have close to 5,000, and I joke, you know, all we've really done is hire me so far, and I'm not that interesting.
You bought 5,000 in the door,
right?
With you, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I won't take credit for, you know, Joe Lacob also saying we're going to win a championship in the next 5 years.
That
may have helped, too. You know, so that's a big deal for us.
Again, to get first access to season tickets for this historic WNBA season in 2025, place a deposit at warriors.com/WNBA today. That was Jenny Kavnar and LaChyna Robinson on the game call asking the questions of Jeff Smith. Quick LaChyna Robinson aside, and this is kind of apropos of nothing, but I have her phone charger from 4 years ago. We sat next to each other at an Oregon-Stanford women's basketball game. This was the day when Sabrina Ionescu spoke at Kobe's funeral and then went up north to Palo Alto and became the first player in NCAA Division I history to amass 2,000 career points, 1,000 career rebounds, and 1,000 career assists. I think she was short on the rebounds coming into that game and then got like the however many rebounds she needed to get to surpass the 1K career boards mark. She dominated that game. Oregon would have won the national championship that year if they had played the NCAA tournament. Unfortunately, couldn't due to COVID. I will stand by that. But it was great to hear LaChyna on the broadcast last night. You know, of course, you had Jenny Kavnar on the play-by-play. We'll be doing the Oakland A's this year. Big congrats to Jenny for that. But I was trying to do the math in my head, and the Sacramento Monarchs started, I want to say, around the time you were finishing up your tenure as the coach of the Sacramento Kings. Was there any overlap at all? Any? Do you have any kind of early look at the Sacramento Monarchs?
Oh, sure. Yeah, those, I got to tell you, when they came there, to this day, I don't know why they'd left. But I got to tell you, Kev, they drew big crowds. There was a lot of energy and enthusiasm. Ruthie Bolton was there. And, boy, she was a heck of a player back in her day. And our guys liked it. I mean, Mitch Richmond and Lionel Simmons and Walt Williams and Tisdale, they all enjoyed the watching the games and talking to the girls and all that kind of thing. And it was a big hit. I enjoyed taking my kids, boy, Greg and Emily. We used to go and, you know, it was during the summer. We'd sit there on the floor and have a great day or a great evening. And, you know, it's been a long road for the WNBA. And it's just awesome that it's really starting to really just really emerge in a big time way. You can feel it, and it's exciting. I remember I've known Tara for Vanderveer for a long time, and I have so much respect for her as a person and as a coach. And I remember when we were doing the pre and post game, there was also another show. We had Lindsay Gottlieb on, and when she was Cal. And boy, oh boy, is she an impressive person. So there's some great, great people in the game, and I think it's just going to be a great fit for the Bay Area because women's, girls basketball is really big here in the Bay Area. I'd debate whether it's as big as anywhere in the country. And look at Archbishop Mitty this year. What a tremendous... Yep. I was coaching girls, CYO, when I was general manager of the Warriors. My daughter Emily was playing. And I remember we played against Sue Phillips' team over there at Mitty. Wow. And they had a girl, I think her name was Robinson. And
Danielle Robinson.
Yeah. So, you know, I was trying to teach the girls man-to-man defense. And quickly I said, geez, I got to change this deal. We got to play a box and one, or we're going to play a 2-3 zone because we can't even stay in front of her. And she was a terrific player. But I loved coaching the girls, and that was a blast. So it's a big piece to me.
Yeah, Danielle Robinson went on to Oklahoma, played in the WNBA. I actually went to high school with her older brother. He's a year older than me. But yeah, Danielle Robinson, you won't find too many players who are faster with the basketball in their hands than Danielle Robinson. I mean, I tell you. And then you mentioned Lindsay Gottlieb. Eventually, there will be a female head coach in the NBA, and Lindsay Gottlieb has... I mean, if you were to put odds on it, Lindsay Gottlieb has got to be at or near the top of that list. So she did a great job as an assistant with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
She has it rolling at USC right now. They're a one seed in the NCAA tournament. So I think maybe her future with men's basketball is not over.
Boy, that's exciting. You know what I loved about her, Kev, was her humility. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
She was just real. I just she left, and I told Pop, Greg Pop, I said, wow, I can see why this person is a big time coach. You could just feel it just talking with her. It was a great experience for me.
Yeah, took Cal to the Final Four back when you guys were doing the pre and post game right there in 2013. We're here on Warriors Roundtable talking Dubs. Kevin Dana, Gary St. G, taking your calls, 888-957-9570. And let's turn the clock back to happier times, Saturday night, when the Warriors won in L.A. against the L.A. Lakers. Again, they had that 11-game losing streak at Crypto.com against the Lakers and the Clippers combined. And well, I mean, there was one clear turning point in this game, and it was obviously the Anthony Davis eye injury. So in the 12 minutes Anthony Davis was on the court, the Warriors scored 4 points in the paint. The rest of the game, they scored 58 points in the paint, and I think the game, maybe the Warriors would have still won, but the game certainly would have had a much different tenor to it if Anthony Davis was still playing.
Yeah, I think you're being nice. I think that would have been a dogfight, really a difficult game. And it allowed the dribble penetration to the paint, finishes in there, second shot opportunities, and really a really nice road performance. We keep talking about the Warriors' home record and their road record and the craziness at the end of the game. We'll talk about that. But missing Davis was big. But it isn't a break until you capitalize on it. And kudos to the Warriors. They did a great job. And, you know, Draymond was tremendous distributing the ball and rebounding. And I really enjoyed that game. That was a good game.
Yeah, Draymond Green, 6 points, 12 rebounds, 13 assists, just 2 turnovers. And it just seemed like, and we've seen this play time after time, but when they didn't have Anthony Davis, it became even more apparent. They would commit two to Steph Curry when he was on the ball, pass it to Draymond Green. He'd get at the foul line, and then either Wiggins or Kuminga are cutting from the baseline for an easy alley-oop. And they must have done that time after time after time against the Lakers on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, Kev, the opposite of what the Knicks did last night. They stayed in the corner and shot the three. But it's the same thing. Hartenstein on the roll passing to the corner shooter, maybe McBride. But in this case, you had Draymond on the roll, and he is as good a lob passer, as almost as good as Chris Paul. And we had three of them during the course of the game, and we call that the dunker position, that guy about 12 feet on the baseline off the lane and timed it perfectly. And those break your back, because as a coach, you're figuring out your rotation, what we're doing, how we're handling the pick and roll, who we're going to rotate to the roll guy and who's pinching in and all that. That was like bing, bang, boom. And now what the heck are you going to do, Lakers?
Yeah. I mean, they were very precise with that. I mean, they had 38 assists against 7 turnovers in that game. And another guy who played well, you talk about the 62 points of the paint, but how about Klay Thompson off the bench? 26 points, and it was really his 18 points in the first 8 minutes that he played that kept Golden State afloat when Steph didn't have it going, and it looked like perhaps the Lakers could create a little separation early. They had a 7-point lead, which is nothing in today's NBA. But it just felt like the Lakers had the upper hand early, even without Anthony Davis available there, you know, midway through the second quarter. But Klay Thompson kept them around, and then they really just kind of took off as a team in the second half.
Kev, I'm always excited when Klay plays great down there in L.A. because his dad is down there doing the radio, and his dad's a tremendous guy. I was coaching during his entire career. And he was a heck of a player on the championship team with the Lakers. And just imagine, you could feel probably the beam from coming off of him just watching Klay play. I mean, he's got to stay neutral or focused or lean to the Lakers. But, you know, to watch your son play like that, that's got to be an unbelievable feeling. Amazing.
Yeah, no, it really does. Michael would come watch or Michael Thompson, the other Michael, his son Michael, when he was with the Santa Cruz Warriors, he'd come watch him in SoCal whenever we'd be down there. I love listening to Michael Thompson, the father, on the radio. He and John Ireland do a really nice job. But how about these splits from Klay, bench versus starting? As a starter this year, 30 minutes per game, 16.6 points per game, 41% field goal percentage, 37% three-point field goal percentage. Off the bench, 20.1 points per game, 47% from the field, 45% from downtown, and in 3 fewer minutes, he's averaging a half assist more per game. He had 8 assists last night. He really has a nice connection to that second unit with Trayce Jackson-Davis. We've seen them really dating back to that Charlotte game right after the All-Star break. Those two have worked really well in tandem. It showed again last night. Those two were some of the bright spots in that loss to the Knicks, and I just Klay, he's really finding his groove off the bench.
Well, Kev, I got to tell you, I don't know that I've ever seen him pass the ball better. And you're right on with the connection with Davis. So here's your deal. Davis is the screener, and Klay's coming off underneath the hoop to either side and comes to Davis' side. Well, when your scouting report tells you that the guy guarding Davis plus the guy guarding Klay, the defender on the picker is going to take a half a step out. And the guy on Klay, when you got a great shooter, we use the phrase lock and trail, meaning you put your inside shoulder between the shoulder blades of Klay and try to trail him out around the screen. If you go over the top, you're going to get screened, and then he's going to be wide open fading to the corner. Well, he comes off there and catches and may not have a shot right away, and he's finding Davis on these rolls. I've never seen him pass the ball better. It's just terrific to watch. And maybe it's because he's maybe watching Chris Paul so much and playing with him. But it's great. And, you know, that rookie, to his credit, good hands, good timing, good finish. Because veteran guys, you can roll, but if you're not productive, veteran guys aren't going to pass you the ball. That's the way it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, Davis is doing just a fantastic job. But Klay, you know, there's so much to the mental side of this game. We have so many great physical talents, but the mental side is huge. Klay has been this phenomenal competitor, what we call a two-way player, a fantastic defender up until his injuries, and we all know about the shooting. And he's got a lot of pride, and he was competing, and getting, it was wearing on him that he wasn't playing at the level that he wanted to. And, you know, whether it was talking to Draymond or talking to Steve, he just looked so happy and comfortable out there. And, you know, it's just the Klay Thompson that we all know, and thrilled to watch him playing like this, after having dealt with the injuries.
And by the way, for all the shooting struggles he had at different points of the season, he's up to 39% from three.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, just in a down year, he is still 39% from downtown on more than 8 attempts per game. You will take that every day of the week with just your normal NBA player, which, of course, Clay is not a normal NBA player. What do you think of the ending to that game on Saturday, Sane? I mean, it took, I think, 23 minutes to finish, like, the last buck 50 in a game that, I mean, it wasn't over, but it wasn't like a one-possession game where you were taking 4 or 5 timeouts. It was because of the clock issues. This is from Dammy Emmerman of Bay Area News Group. He said a Crypto.com Arena spokesperson and shot clock engineer declined to comment when approached after the game. So, I don't know what there is to hide, but I thought we had our struggles in the G League with the malfunctioning clocks and scoreboards. Oh, I hadn't seen anything yet. Had you ever seen anything like that?
No, that was the worst I've ever seen. And from my days as a coach and general manager, I always thought there were rules in place when you had malfunction electrical problems at the table. And now your 24-second clock's not working. So you give it a couple of tries. I don't know what the number is. Well, then you have backup clocks that they, like in the, maybe in a rec league, where they put the, in the corners, they put the 24-second clock. And they never brought them out. I don't know what the heck was going on. Part of that, to me, would have been the crew chief going to who was in charge of the table and obviously in charge of those shot clocks to get them out there. And so game management, to me, was a lot of slippage. And I'm sure the league is going to use this as an example because, hey, it's a big game. Those two teams are a big, big draw. And what does the NBA live off of the TV ratings? And to have that happen, I don't know, it was about 20 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it just was terrible. You had LeBron cracking jokes about this is as long as a Seinfeld episode. And then you saw Steph and Draymond jogging up and down the court, lifting up their knees and all that, kind of trying to stay loose. I was worried about somebody getting hurt, cooling down and then trying to play again. Yeah. So that was not a good scene. You leave with a win, but everyone was shaking their heads. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, Ben Affleck hardly could keep his eyes open. Said court.
Well, I liked when they showed him because then I got to look at J-Lo.
Yeah, there you go.
And I liked their boots.
Good boots. I was not paying attention to.
Oh, I always pay attention to her.
We're wearing, but it was good to see all the celebs sitting courtside, as always for a Lakers game. But so the Warriors got the win on the road. They're 18-14 on the road, which is miles better than what they were last year. The problem is they're 17-18 at home. What gives? So this is what Steph Curry had to say after last night's loss to the Knicks, and then, Gary, I want to get your reaction about how the Warriors just aren't winning at home.
Honestly, I don't know what the answer is. It's always that thing. If you did, you'd be able to get ahead of it. It's just every game's a little different, whether you're giving up a big lead in the fourth quarter or not getting off to a good start where you don't control any of the momentum. We've kind of seen it all, so you pick it. We've experienced it.
Yeah, I'm with Steph. I mean, I'm puzzled. I can't figure this out because you've got a great fan base. Playing there is a big advantage, I think, to the home team. And they were so terrific at home last year and so bad on the road. And, I can deal with the beginning of the year. Maybe, Podzinski and Davis are getting some time or some other guys are getting some more time, whether it's younger Kuminga wasn't really firing at all cylinders in the beginning. And, we've had the, what's going on with Wiggins and whatever. But these last 20 games or whatever, to me, I'm still of this mindset. I'm kind of like Windhorst. I'm not throwing in the towel on the Warriors. I'm not doing it. You better not do it because if everything gets going good, you don't want to play the Warriors. There's no way. And if they're on a road, You know, right now they could play the Lakers. That might get as high a rating as it would the NBA Finals.
Yeah, for a 9-10 play-in matchup.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the matchup right now.
Yeah, and because the other one is Dallas and Phoenix.
Yeah.
And it's a big difference, Kev. You know, I'm preaching to the choir here, but if you get 7 or 8, if you lose, you get another game.
Get
another
chance.
Win, you're in.
Yep.
So if you're in that 9-10 thing, it's like the NCAA. It's March Madness. You lose, you know, book your ticket home. You're done.
Exactly. And look, I know there are fans out there that think, well, oh, it's changed since the team has left Oakland, and, you know, Oracle, Roracle, those are the true fans. But here are the facts. In the 2021 season, the Warriors were 25-11 at Chase with a team that bowed out in the play-in. When they won the title at Chase, they were 31-10 in the regular season. Last year, for all their faults, and they stumbled to 44-38, they were 33-8 at Chase Center.
Wow.
So you can't say it's a change of venue. This is just, I mean, I don't know if you call it an anomaly, or you mentioned kind of early season struggles, and you know how, you know, like early season trends, right? Like the Golden State Warriors last year had an 0-5 road trip to the East Coast, and they never really found their footing on the road until like the last week of the regular season. This year they had a 2-5 homestand in December and January. I mean, could those be tone setters?
They got me puzzled. And I've told you the story that, you know, I got a lot of friends that like to put a few dollars on a game. They'll call me for my opinion, and whatever I say, they go opposite. Because
yeah.
I get tied up into who's coaching and, you know, the matchups and all that kind of thing. I get too detailed, and I people just laugh at me. But I don't understand this at all. And especially because you've got four guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, four guys for sure.
You're just saying, hey, fellas, this is how you do it, and this is what we got to do here. And it's got to be driving them all crazy, no doubt about it.
What do the Warriors, Jazz, Grizzlies, and Spurs have in common? They are the four teams of the Western Conference that have losing records at home. So, not company you want to keep. The Warriors Community Foundation auction presented by Cache Creek Casino Resort is open. Bid on game-worn jerseys, signed items, and exclusive experiences. Go to warriors.com/auction to place your bid. We'll take a break. Come on back and take a look at the Western Conference. Are the Warriors destined for the 9-10 play-in game? We'll discuss that on the other side of this timeout right here on 95.7 The Game.
If you've just joined us, don't worry. We saved your seat.
Sit down.
Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down.
At the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
Curry behind the back. Wade stops it. Pops on the way. Ridiculous three on the right sideline.
Now, here's Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean.
What up, what up? Still time for you to get in the show, 888-957-9570. Kevin Dana, Gary St. Jean with you for the next 10 minutes or so right here on 95.7 The Game. Well, the Warriors, after the loss last night, back down into 10th, 35-32, even in the loss column with the Lakers, and they can still get the tiebreak with L.A. They'll have to win that game at Crypto.com, the final regular season matchup between the two later on this season. So the 9 very much up for grabs, but the rest, well, I don't know. This is what Stephen Curry had to say about how he sees the Warriors' place in the standings, and Saint will get your reaction to it after this soundbite from Steph.
Maybe a week or two ago, 60 was the motivation. Right now, I think I could care less about where you're at. It's just the consistency of how we're playing. That's the most important thing, because honestly, who cares what seed you are? If you play like we did tonight, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever it is, doesn't matter. You're not going to get very far. So that's the perspective and the focus. It doesn't really matter where the standings are.
Well, Kev, that's a lecture in realism, not optimism. And that's facts right there. He knows that they've got to play better. He knows they can play better. And they've got a couple more games at home here before a road trip. And they're winnable games. They're teams that are You know, Memphis has had just a plethora of injuries, but they'll come in and play hard. And then Indiana, who, you know, they're a fun team to watch. They want to score like Dallas. They're just going to get up and down the floor on you. So, but it's about taking care of your own business, and it's just got to be better. You know, you talked about assist turnovers, and you know, they just need more consistency out of the guys and in the rotation, and it's about the guys on the floor.
Yep, it is totally about the guys on the floor. And I paused there for a little bit because I am staring at the Western Conference standings. I'm looking at the sixth place Sacramento Kings, and all I can think of is that last in-season tournament game where the Warriors had a 24-point lead. They were up multiple possessions in the final minute and lost. If they had just held on to that game, the Kings would be 38-29. The Warriors would be 36-31. They'd be 2.5 games out of six because Dallas would move up. But it would be another team that they would have a tiebreaker against as well. And I know you're not the biggest tiebreaker guy, Gary, but if you could have tiebreakers against the Kings and Lakers, that path to eighth, forget sixth or seventh, the path to eighth, which you were talking about in the previous segment, Gary, you get two cracks at getting into the playoffs, would be a lot easier. Now, I mean, look, Sacramento, I think you can't expect them to do worse than maybe 47-35. Likely 48-34 is kind of what we're looking at. Call it 47-35. The Warriors would need to go 48-34. They would also need the Mavericks and Suns to go no better than 8-6 the rest of the way, which is right around 60%. So, which is more or less where they're playing. So, in order for them to go 48-34, they would need to go 13-2 the rest of the way. 46-36 might be good enough for the 8 seed, and there you're looking at 11-4. And the other thing, the Houston Rockets are 2.5 games back of the Golden State Warriors. They've won 6 in a row. They're 33-35, and their upcoming games are against the Jazz, which have called it quits on this season, the Chicago Bulls, who are pretty good, and the Portland Trail Blazers. So that's at least 2-1 in their next three games.
I did not know that about Houston, but one thing I like that they've done down there, we talked about the Knicks playing hard, we talked about Orlando playing hard, they play hard, and it's because of Brooks and Van Fleet coming in there. The veteran guys have set the tone because those guys were all about flying around, dunking, shooting threes, and looking good for the team picture before those guys came. And they're playing a lot better. Now, your statement about the records, wow, that's a tall order. But I will say to you that I don't think that Dallas had a great win the other night with Kyrie's running a left-handed hook shot there from the free throw.
Oh, unbelievable.
But I'll tell you, Phoenix is not playing well. And Dallas, I just don't trust them because they don't play any defense. The Kings have been... they're kind of an enigma to me because I watch them play, and some nights they look fabulous, and other nights they're going to lose to Utah or these teams that you said have packed it in. You know, I look at them, and I'm Sabonis and Fox, you know, they got a potent offense. And so I think they can stay up there. The team that's just shocked me, and I've just got to admit that I was wrong, is the Pelicans. They have done a great job. The Clippers better be careful. They might catch them for four. And I never thought that I'd say that the loss of Westbrook has really taken their team down a little bit. But he created pace for the Clippers, and they just have not played well. They've been about 500 over the last couple weeks. So that's going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, as you and I are talking here, I've got Minnesota and Denver on. Denver had a couple of hiccups this past week, but yet they're winning up in Minnesota. And so this is going to be a great, you know, last, I don't know, three and a half weeks of basketball in the NBA.
Yeah, so Houston won by 23 Washington State. Jalen Green has really been playing well. Yeah. He had 42 in the game tonight. And Dallas has a five-point lead, making a three-point lead with 8 minutes to go in San Antonio. Wembanyama double-double with five blocks in that one. Luka with 14 points, 14 assists. And Denver up seven at Minnesota as we speak here on Warriors Roundtable. So they got the Memphis Grizzlies and Indiana Pacers coming to town on Wednesday and Friday to wrap up this three-game homestand before they go to the friendly confines of the road, where they have been better this year. But, I mean, without it, I mean, there's no question saying they got to take these next two. You cannot go 1-2 on this homestand. And look, the Memphis Grizzlies have not been good this year because they you know, obviously John Morant's been out. Desmond Bane has had some health issues. Jaren Jackson's had a nice year statistically. They are 15-19 on the road. For all their troubles this year, they're 8-27 at home. But they're 15-19 on the road, and Taylor Jenkins, I think, has done a pretty nice job this year. He's squeezed a lot out of this team, and once Ja Morant gets healthy, they're going to be right back in the thick of it next season.
Oh, there isn't any doubt about it. I think Taylor Jenkins is a very good young coach. You know a lot about his background. I really like the way his team plays hard. And I'm a big fan of Bane. I just think he's a heck of a guard in a smaller market. And, you know, then you got to get ready for Indiana. And I don't know what's happened since Halliburton, you know, had the when we had those in-season tournament thing where he was fantastic. But he had a hamstring issue. But still, he is phenomenal young talent. I just think he's terrific. And, you know, they got some other good pieces with Turner. So those are going to be two games that you got to win at home. And take care, as Steve has said, hey, we can look at everybody else and what's going on. We got to take care of our own business. We got to start playing consistent, good basketball. And then when we get to this play-in thing, we'll be ready, and we'll be ready to attack anybody.
Yeah, so a couple of big games at home. I'll be up there at Chase Center tomorrow doing stats for Eric Hasseltine of Grizzlies Radio. Always an entertaining listen. And then the Indiana Pacers on Friday. You win those two games, you're 37-32 and building a little bit of mojo before you head out east. And actually, it'll start with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Quickly, got to let you know about our upcoming broadcast presented by Ticketmaster before we send it away. Tomorrow, taking on the Grizzlies, 6:30 on the air, 7 p.m. tip time on 95.7 presented by Johnson Controls. Then the homestand concludes with Indiana, 6:30 airtime, 7 p.m. tip time. That's Latino Heritage Night presented by Modelo. The road trip will start in Minnesota on Sunday, 3:30 on the air, 4 p.m. tip time on 95.7. It will continue in Miami, 4 p.m. airtime, 4:30 tip time on Tuesday, March 26th, and then back end of a back-to-back third game in 4 days against Orlando. That is not an easy start to the road trip. 3:30 on the air, 4 p.m. tip time with Tim Roy on the call Wednesday, March 27th against the Magic. Well, that'll do it for us tonight, folks. Big thank you to Mark Grandy behind the glass, to Marika Kleto and R.C. Davis on the Warriors side of things, Jess Smith for the audio she provided with her interview on Women's Empowerment Month broadcast last night on NBC Sports Bay Area. And for you, the listener, for the Saint, I'm Kevin Dennis saying sayonara. We will talk to you next Thursday, March 28th, for our next edition of Warriors Roundtable right here on 95.7 The Game.
You've been listening to the Warriors Roundtable.
Curry brings it through, one hand, three, up and good!
On the exclusive home of your Golden State Warriors.
That playful and
95.7 The Game.
For tickets, call 888-GSW-HOOP.